years after Deborah Granik's modest independent movie Winter's Bone, featuring the then unknown Jennifer Lawrence, garnered 4 Oscar nominations, she came out with another haunting film. It's called Leave No Trace and follows a veteran father and his teenage daughter who've been living undetected in the Oregon woods. It stars Ben Foster as the father, Will, along with remarkable Thomasin Harcourt McKenzie as his daughter, Tom. Leave No Trace opens this Friday at the Angelica and Lincoln Square Cinemas, and I'm excited it brings Deborah Granik here today. Welcome.
Thank you.
So, 8 years since Winterbone, did you want to go hiding after all of that attention? Was it hard to handle?
But that's not the reason why it takes a long time to make a film. I mean,
no.
I feel that the support for Winter's Bone actually was extremely helpful in letting us know that the kind of stories we're attracted to have resonance with others, and that people also like films, respond to films that are set in regions. So Winter's Bone was very helpful.
Right.
And it takes a long time. There are numerous projects that happen. Some don't ever reach the screen. Scripts are written. Research is done. Documentaries are made.
Yeah, exactly.
Children are born. You know?
Well, we just heard from Mike Reese from The Simpsons that 9 months for a 20-minute episode. So that puts it in perspective in terms of a feature film and all of the work and years that might go into it. The film is based on Peter Rock's novel, The Abandonment. When did you discover that book?
So the book was shown to me by 2 producers here in New York, Linda Reisman and Ann Harrison, and they had loved this novel, had optioned it from Peter Rock, and they, at some point, they had been looking for collaborators. They brought it to me. I read it and responded very rapidly to what I read.
It struck you straight away.
Yes. Really front and center, outstanding location, full of texture,
right.
Pattern. Who among us doesn't want to film in a forest, you know, just because of what it gives? And then the very rapid mystery, why are they living undetected? What
right.
motivates them? What do they need from that? What
right.
do they? What would happen if they got detected? So
right.
there's this strange existential suspense, you know, and I was very drawn in, and I wanted to know how.
How much, you mentioned documentaries earlier in terms of things happening between films. You made the documentary Stray Dog. Is that somehow related to this? Do you see that fitting into this?
Yes, I do. The person who made Stray Dog with me, you know, in terms of the subject, Stray Dog himself, was someone who was ready to, tell and divulge a lot of the American history that he had lived through, the decades of his life, so that's a specific span, coming of age in Southeast Asia, participating in Vietnam. And he informed me tremendously. It was a kind of firsthand retelling of American history from one person's perspective in the middle of the country, and it really informed the backstory for the character in Leave No Trace, the father's backstory as
right.
a combat veteran. It also showed me something in terms of scrappy survivorship. Stray Dog runs and lives in a RV community, and by staying there, by filming there, I had much greater insight to how people live in small dwellings and what it means to build a community when you don't have a whole lot of material possessions. And,
right.
and that translated into the community that Will and Tom
establish for themselves,
or find at the towards the end of the story.
Mm-hmm. Well, like Winter's Bone, this is a powerful story of an adolescent girl who's forced to give up the life she knew to adjust to changes she couldn't expect. What draws you to these kinds of stories?
I specifically like stories where someone's resources have to be called and drawn out, meaning that we have a lot in us to navigate. We have a lot of moxie. There's this nobility in like almost all of us.
Right.
Right. Unless something's gone terribly, terribly wrong. And I love to see how a story can almost display that or make it known to us, especially when the path is not laid out, when it's not easy, when there's not a cushion, when it's not in a zip code that's associated with affluence, when it's not about having, you know, the depiction of life where everyone has a pool in their backyard. Not everyone has that.
Well, and that this idea of latent moxie, I love that. I mean, that's and Mackenzie, the actress, carries that in the film. It's almost at every turn, she's just trying to peek at the outside world and sort of glean it and find a place for herself in it. Ultimately, of course, what I admire about your scripts is how you use extreme situations to examine character, not just to frighten or scare viewers. Some viewers might feel that Ben Foster's character, a veteran named Will, who was chosen to live off the grid, is a difficult and ornery person to deal with. Do you know people like Will? What's your sort of interpretation of this complex character?
I think when someone chooses to be secluded, when someone chooses to be undetected, we might experience that as ornery, because that is dispensing with some social niceties or, sort of the need for chit-chat and certain banalities seems to no longer figure into their existence. So that terseness, that directness, that focus might intimidate us, because that is not the normal conduct of everyday life and for most of us. And I think also the fact that someone's grappling with things that we can't see, that's always a complex relationship. To know that to have a confirmation that there are things that are cursing through that person's conscience and through their lived experience and how that's playing out, that you may not be able to relate to, and yet you know that they must bring that to the interaction.
Right. We know he's a veteran, but other than that, it's never really articulated what he's suffering from. How did you help Ben Foster work through how to approach Will?
So, with PTSD or PTS, there's a couple really rich ways to hear some very astute words that are said about it now. The book that I always love to cite is the book called The Evil Hours by David J. Morris, which informed me tremendously because of the precision with which he chronicled his journey with PTS as both a Marine and a journalist. So reading something like that gives Ben these very specific sensations and adjectives. He also had put great effort into previous films to interviewing, talking with, training with combat veterans. Previous films that he had worked on required that of him. He brought that endowment forward to this film. And lastly, the literature from the VA itself is very helpful. It was so helpful for Tom.
Right.
The literature, the pamphlets that say, what is it like to be the teen child of a combat veteran?
Yeah.
Or the teen child of someone that's experiencing PTSD?
Well, and in terms of these specific touches, too, one of the things that stands out is we see the assault of sound, as it were, when he's working on cutting pine trees, right? So even those very specific cues. Yeah. So how did you cast the part of Will's daughter, Tom, played by Thomasin Harcourt McKenzie? She gives a remarkable, steady, and assured performance. Talk about sort of that process of finding a young actress capable of this.
Tom is from New Zealand, and she had heard of the script and read it with great attention and detail, and read the novel, took it upon herself to just, really steep herself in what the vibe of the story was and what some of the crucial conflicts were. And an audition that she sent, that she self-taped, was very strong. That led to a discussion that was interesting, and I felt her generosity of spirit. And I always have to highlight that willingness is the key.
Right.
Willingness to jump in, to take some kind of outdoor skills training that would be required. She would have to have known these things if she was going to inhabit this character and be in these shoes, in these boots, let's say.
Right.
That her reading of the story she was infusing it with thoughts and feelings from her own life. And I love that, because I can't provide that. The actor has to want to provide that.
Had she discovered the character of Tom at the outset in her audition, or was it something that you were able to sort of pull out with her through these discussions and through a few readings?
I think it was a few readings and a few discussions, And interestingly enough, the character didn't carry her name at the beginning. At the onset, the character was called Caroline, which was from the novel My Abandonment. And in the rehearsal period, we kept hearing her, everyone was calling her Tom, and Ben was calling her Tom. And I just said, this feels so right. Is it okay if you keep your name for this?
Right.
So she thought it would work, and I feel like it did.
I want to talk about a setting, because it's so important, I feel, to both of your films. Winter's Bone took place in the Missouri Ozarks, and Leave No Traces in the Pacific Northwest, specifically the Forest Park area outside of Portland, Oregon. How do those locations shape the stories you tell?
Oh, they shape everything. I mean, because a region shapes a person, you know. We just conferred that the suburbs shaped us, right?
Right.
In a sort of perverse way, possibly. But
right.
So given that regions shape you, or places that you're born out of and in and then develop within, they really tell so much about what you're up against, what your outlook is, what options are available to you. That would be for an urban setting as well as a semi-rural setting. So, but they also dictate a palette, and they dictate idiosyncrasies, a dialect. They bring with them customs, habits, food substances. You know, they bring a host of specificity, which for a filmmaker such as myself, that there's just sort of that's what you go for. That's
right.
That's it.
In terms of locations, you know, you're in real places, as it were. You're not on a soundstage. I'm sure that that's thrilling on the one hand, but presents so many technical challenges too, right? How would the film be different if you were to manufacture it on a soundstage?
Oh, I feel like almost that question, you know, with true reverential
respect. You just felt
respect.
The film die.
Well, no, I would just say that I'm such the wrong filmmaker to
yeah.
even conjure that, because I feel like I maybe have never confessed this, but I guess I'm pretty phobic about soundstages.
Huh.
You know, I only know how to make a film in a real setting. In fact, it can bite me because, you know, some real settings are like you say, they will present problems of sound or distraction or chaos, or, you know, it's not easy to close down two lanes of a grocery store, you know?
Yeah. And you might get rain that you don't expect.
Right. Or the rain might be completely
exactly.
crucial to the atmosphere of the story. But the fact is, I really exclusively work in real locations, and they fuel me too. They bring their own. Again, it's that next layer of detail. The soundstage, I will get there someday, but it has to be the real environment. They're always a character. They're always the overarching character, really.
I love the reaction to the two characters as they try to cope with suddenly living in society again. Will's character isn't one to say a lot, so a lot is shown through very small things, yes, in the experience, right, in the sort of behavior, the human behavior.
That's so true, and I think that Ben really actually wanted to keep going on that trajectory in the filming of this, that the terseness and the minimalist language was what he felt was very true to this character. This character feels a lot, thinks a lot, for sure, and doesn't verbalize it. And so therefore, we did have to show details, gestures of how he acclimates to the first night in what you call maybe experiencing four-wall syndrome, right? That he's now in a very small room, and it has devices and appliances, some of which he no longer wants to be in close proximity to. But he doesn't verbalize that. He shows his discomfort.
Right. I think it's important to say that the film does a great job of showing social workers in a positive light, even though they're not part of the solution for the characters, as it were. People here are really trying to help Will and Tom, yes?
Absolutely. That was born out of the research. You know, I always say it's on us. We would be in the very wrong, if you go out and do research and you find out that the social workers that we spoke to informed us, and we got great insight into how they would handle this, what they would be striving for, their reasons, their motivations for certain kinds of questioning and what they need to do and accomplish. It would be on us if we threw them under the bus. Why do most people become social workers? To assist in someone else's experience when they're experiencing distress or something that could be injurious to them. Things can run amok and things can go wrong, but to depict them as somehow with malintent,
right,
or as in some kind of villainous role,
right,
would be really a breach of having your informant tell you one thing and then distorting it.
Right, right.
Yeah.
And no need to chase a villain. You have so much conflict, a rich conflict in this film without sort of a black and white villain. How do you want people to feel at the end of the film?
I feel that I love the question that Will and Tom posed to one another at different points in the film, which is, what does it take to think your own thoughts? You know, they claim, you know, he makes the statement, we can still think our own thoughts. Then she questions him about that or brings that back up. And I think the question hangs in the air in the digital era, in the sizzling, you know, overarching tent of hyperconnectivity and a time of following that we never could have presaged. You know, what does it take to actually extricate yourself a little bit so that you could remember thoughts and feelings and philosophies and prior philosophies and thoughts and feelings by others. How do you retain that versus being so totalized into the here,
right,
with what we call, you know, the amplified chatter,
mm-hmm,
of the social media network,
right,
that also sucks down our data and does other weird things. He wants none of it.
You know, I said it earlier, and I mean it as the biggest compliment. It's very hard to say what this film is about, because it covers so much terrain. And on the one hand, it could be about war and PTSD. On the other hand, it's about, I think, each of us as individuals and how we fit into society. I think it's a remarkable accomplishment, and I thank you so much for joining me today.
Oh, my big pleasure. Thank you.
I'm D.W. Gibson, and I've been speaking with director Deborah Granick about her latest film, Leave No Trace. Leave No Trace opens this Friday at the Angelica Film Center at Lincoln Center as well. And at the Angelica Film Center, there'll be Q&A sessions following the 7:50 showings on Friday and Saturday nights. For more information, visit our show page at wnyc.org/midday.